just after 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning, and that must mean it's time again for Money Management with Opus 111 Group's Mike Mayo. Here's Mike.
Hey, good morning, and welcome to Money Management with Mike Mayo. This is Jim Harvey, president of Opus 111 Group, and today I'm substituting for your regular host, Mike Mayo, who is senior vice president of our firm and oversees our Spokane branch. Has this been the case since the outset of the COVID pandemic? This is not the usual Saturday morning call-in show. Naturally, we look forward to returning to the call-in format. But until then, if you have any questions you'd like us to address in future money management shows, please email them to info@opus111group.com, and we will either answer them directly or during next week's show. We also encourage and invite you to visit our website for the latest on the markets, listen to our video and audio podcasts, and our perspectives on how you can manage your portfolio in a way that enhances your ability to achieve your financial goals. In a few minutes, I will turn things over to my son, Andrew, who will provide you with the key market-related data after Friday's close. I will then be back to cover some key economic news for the for the past week. And then after that, I will discuss first a 10 predictions for 2023 and how we're looking based on those predictions there. A segment on AI with the recent ChatGPT craze. And then finally, discussion of bonds, interest rate risk, and the Fed, and whether people should consider extending their maturities. And now I am going to turn things over to Andrew, who will give you the closing stock market report.
Thanks, Jim. Here are the major numbers from the indices for the week. For the S&P 500, it was largely flat in the trading week after Easter. Having closed last Thursday at 4105.02, it closed this Friday at 4137.64. All in all, it was pretty flat all throughout the week, but on Thursday it did see a 1.33% jump for the S&P 500 before closing down just a little under a quarter of a percent on Friday. The S&P 500 overall is up 7.77% on the year. That's lucky, but it is still 5.8% lower than it was this time 1 year ago. The Dow is up 2.23% so far in 2023, down 1.64% from this time in 2022. The NASDAQ up 15.8% so far this year, but down 9.19% from this time 1 year ago, and the Russell 2000 is up 1.13%, down 11.16% from this time in 2022. Crude oil up 2.67% so far this year, but it is down almost 23% from that elevated prices that we saw in the early stages of the Russian invasion of Ukraine last spring. And finally, gold up 10.33% so far this year, up 2.12%. from this time last year. Taking a look at some of the major economic numbers that we're starting to see roll in from March, bit of a mixed bag as far as the overall economic conditions are concerned. The producer price index declined 0.5% in the course of March. The consumer price index, however, rose 0.1%, so 0.1 of a percentage point. They are saying that Supercore, which overlooks some of the more extraneous parts of the CPI, are up higher than that, suggesting that inflation is still a problem in the broader economic spectrum. Retail sales declined 1%, but industrial production did rise 0.4% over the span of March. Those are the broad speaking economic numbers and index numbers from this past week. I'm Andrew Harvey. As a reminder, if you have a young investor in your life or you are a young investor and would like to learn more about our sci-fi program, I encourage you to check our website at opus111group.com. Back to you, Jim.
Thanks, Andrew, for that. And now for some economic news and the review of the first quarter of 2023. I just want to talk a little bit about the first quarter and some highlights. March results helped all three major U.S. indices end the quarter, the first quarter of 2023, in the green. Despite mid-March market turbulence caused by the strain on the banking industry, economic updates continued to show positive signs of growth. Concerns about the debt ceiling and a government default lingered all the way through the quarter. So markets had a solid March as a month-end rally helped bring all three major indices into positive territory for the month. The S&P gained 3.67%, while the Dow Jones Industrial Average increased 2.08%, and the NASDAQ notched a 6.78% gain. March results helped offset weakness in February, and all three indices ended the quarter in the green. The S&P, Dow Jones, and NASDAQ gained 7.5%, 0.93% for the Dow, and 17.05% for the quarter for the NASDAQ. These positive results came despite showing slowing fundamentals. Per Bloomberg Intelligence, the S&P average earnings decline was 2.38% during the fourth quarter of 2022. While this result was marginally better than the 3.26% decline expected at the start of the earnings season, it marks the first quarter with a year-over-year decline since the COVID lockdown impacted third quarter of 2020. Fundamentals drive long-term market performance, so the earnings decline should be monitored. Unlike fundamental factors, technical factors were supportive for the quarter. All three major industries finished March above their respective 200-day moving averages, marking three consecutive months above the trend. International equities had a similar month. The MSCI EAFE index and the MSCI Emerging Markets Index gained 2.48% and 3.07% respectively. For the quarter, the MSCI EAFE gained 8.47%, while the MSCI Emerging Markets Index gained 4.02%. Technical factors were also supportive for international markets and both indices, finishing March above their 200-day moving averages. It was also a strong March for fixed income. Fixed income markets also experienced positive returns as falling rates supported bond investors in March. The 10-year U.S. Treasury yield fell from 4.01% to 3.48%. The notable drop in yields was due to increased investor demand for high-quality fixed income. The Bloomberg Aggregate Bond Index gained 2.5% during the month and 2.96% for the quarter. Obviously, investors, when faced with concern and volatility, go to safety, and those Treasury yields dropping is a result of that. High yield fixed income also had a positive month and quarter. The Bloomberg U.S. Corporate High Index gained 1.07% during the month and 3.57% for the quarter. After experiencing some volatility in the past 3 months, high yield credit spreads ended the quarter in line with where they had started the year. Now, the bank stress definitely worried the markets. High-profile banking failures at Silicon Valley Bank, Signature Bank, and Silvergate Bank garnered headlines and captured investor interest in March. The initial market reaction to the bank failures was a flight to quality trade. Riskier assets like stocks and high-yield bonds sold off, while higher-quality fixed income sectors like the 10-year Treasury saw yields fall and prices rise. While regulators and insurers stepped in to ensure that depositors at these banks did not lose their deposits, the Federal Reserve and the U.S. Treasury also made capital available to other banks to reassure Americans that the banking system as a whole was healthy. The banking turmoil in March created uncertainty and volatility, but the issues that led to the collapse appear to have been largely constrained to a handful of banks rather than a sign of a systemic weakness in the banking system overall. While the bank health will certainly be worth monitoring, given the Fed's continued attempts to combat inflation and raising the rates, banking system risks for investors appear to be behind us. Finally, the outlook still is positive. Despite the mid-month uncertainty, March proved to be positive for investments. While the rise in banking sector risk should be monitored, developments during the month point toward continued risk at a handful of banks rather than systemic cracks in the broader banking system. The fact that all of the major indices we track in this particular segment ended the month in positive territory, and that's a good sign that markets are resilient. Additionally, the continued positive economic backdrop should help support markets. The potential for further short-term uncertainty remains, and a well-diversified portfolio that matches investor timelines and goals is always the best path forward. As always, you should reach out to your financial advisor and discuss your current plan if you have any concerns in those areas. Now I want to go over and amplify what we discussed in the first segment about the first quarter of 2023 by reviewing a gentleman's, Bob Dahl, who makes 10 predictions every year for the upcoming year. And he is the chief investment officer of Crossmark Global Investments. Previous to that, he was with Nuveen for a long time. And, you know, our email inbox is literally inundated every single year, near starting in December and going through basically January, with predictions. And Bob's predictions are ones that I followed for years. I thought it'd be interesting to share them and just sort of see how his predictions are working out so far this year. So his first prediction is that the U.S. experiences a shallow recession, as real GDP is in the bottom 10 of the last 50 years. Now, the jury is out on whether or not a recession actually commences in 2023. With the yield curve steeply inverted, the leading economic indicators down 11 months in a row, money growth is negative, and the lagged efforts of the Fed rising rates from 0 to 4.75 in 12 months, we are still of the view that a mild recession is in our future. And while there are increasing signs of economic slowing, the first quarter GDP is likely to be reasonably strong. So that's the first one. The second one is, inflation falls substantially, but remains above the Fed's target. And I couldn't agree with Bob more on this. Inflation continues to fall. We just saw some good numbers yesterday, but at a slower pace than many anticipated. And you kind of have to divide inflation between goods inflation and services inflation. Goods inflation declines are respectable, but many parts of the service inflation remain stubbornly high. That, of course, would include labor. We continue to believe inflation will fall further, but it's also, to me, that it couldn't come close to the Fed's 2% target. I think that that's an issue. If the Fed decides that they want to hold themselves to a 2% target, we're going to go into a recession. Number three, Fed funds reaches 5% and remains there for the balance of the year. Well, I think it's very likely next month in May they will raise the rates again, another 25 basis points, which will bring it to 5. You know, there are a lot of different opinions about this, but we think it's pretty obvious that inflation is not going to move down as quickly as the Fed thinks. But we do think it's possible once they reach 5 that they'll just stop raising. A lot of people are predicting cuts. I don't agree with that, but we'll have to see. Prediction number four, earnings fall short of expectations due to cost pressures and revenue shortfalls. Although earnings estimates for 2023 have stabilized over the last month or two, those estimates fell from approximately $230 for the S&P in total year-end to $220. We suspect that analysts are waiting for first quarter earnings and management comments before revising down further. We think the S&P 500 earnings estimates will end the year closer to $200. So that's a substantial drop from its peak last year of $250. Number five, no major asset class is up or down by double-digit percentage for only the fourth time this century. This is a fairly unusual prediction because it only happens about 20% of the time. But the frustration of the bears and the frustration of the bulls alternates and is clearly evident so far in 2023. What is amazing is the massive move in bond yields from 5% down to 4% for two-year paper and 4 to 3.5% for 10-year paper. Our view continues to be that this will be a year in which neither the bulls or the bears will be satisfied, and volatility is the mark of the day. The sixth prediction was that energy, consumer staples, and financials outperform utilities, technology, and communication services as value beats growth. And what's interesting is this one is not going the way that Bob thought. While it is far too soon to take a black mark in this prediction, we need a lot of reversal from the first quarter results to get this one right. Investors are cognizant of the extreme reversal from last year. In other words, when value outperformed growth and technology got hammered, we think the pullback in energy is mostly overdone and the rally in technology stocks is overdone. So we think that those things are going to kind of reverse themselves, and it's going to be frustrating for everybody. The seventh prediction is that the average equity manager beats the index in 2023. And this one, the jury is still out. since looking at Bob's predictions in 2023, the results in 2022 are in, and the average manager did beat the index last year, breaking an 8-year streak to the contrary. It's important to remember that anytime you hear somebody says, oh, well, you know, the passive always beats the active and just, you know, give up, that's a cyclical thing. I mean, from the year 2000 to 2009, active managers beat the heck out of the passive strategy. But since 2009, passive strategies have been beating the active managers up until last year. So our prediction is for a repeat this year, but it's contingent on fundamentals for individual companies mattering more than larger economic macro influences. Normal, quote unquote, interest rates and mediocre overall returns will also increase the possibility of this one coming in correctly. All right, prediction number 8 is that international stocks will outperform the U.S. for the second year in a row and the first time since 2006 and 2007. International stocks are starting to get more attention from American investors. The absence of even a normal winter in Europe and the associated energy price and availability concerns, especially with the war in the Ukraine, and the reopening of China from the COVID lockdowns have permitted non-U.S. markets to behave reasonably well so far this year. Some further dollar weakness may be necessary, a necessary condition to put this prediction in the win column, but we think that's pretty likely. So we do expect international stocks to continue to outperform. I know for a number of years, our clients have said, well, why do we have international stocks? And that's because years like last year, and we think also this year, it's important to have that. And so by having things that don't behave just by U.S. stocks, you end up lowering the volatility of the portfolio. Okay, prediction number 9, that India surpasses China as the world's largest population and is the fastest growing large economy. While sooner than Bob had originally expected, the population of India has already topped the population of China. China's population fell by 850,000 in 2022, as we found out in Q1. China continues to dominate the headlines largely due to technology and geopolitical issues. India is experiencing good economic growth. While India needs further financial system reform and liberation, it remains a country with much hope and promise. And then number 10, a double-digit number of candidates announced for president. Let's face it, the political climate has only become more polarized with the indictment of Donald Trump and the dysfunction in D.C. As of the writing of this, there are 6 candidates for president. I think the political noise is only increasing. We expect we will get this one correct, and there is even more talk than usual about a third-party effort in 2024. Either way, the globalization slowdown and the debt interest expense issue here in the U.S. and many other places is gathering steam and attention. So overall, when we're looking at this, the basic outlook for 2023 is that economic growth will continue to weaken this year, and that the full effects of the substantial monetary tightening over the past 12 months have only yet begun to be felt. The main focal points for 2023 will be the Fed and the recession question and corporate earnings. We expect the Fed to raise rates to 5% and keep them unchanged for the balance of the year as inflation falls, but to still unacceptable levels. We believe that a 2% level is way too low. We do acknowledge that the Fed could blink and acquiesce to a 3 to 4% inflation rate for the time being, in which a soft landing, you've heard that phrase, might be possible. But if the Fed insists on their 2% target, a recession is almost inevitable. In the meantime, what the Fed has already done, raising rates from 0 to 4.75 in a short period of time, will have a delayed impact on the economy to be felt in 2023. We expect a mild recession in the U.S. in 2023, and we think that's mild due to the corporate cash on the balance sheets, a reasonably healthy economy, a strong banking system, and full employment. Now I'm going to take a different tack, and we'll talk about something that's maybe you've heard a lot about recently, and that's AI or artificial intelligence. Wall Street's expectations for artificial intelligence influence on markets are skyrocketing, according to a recent survey by JP Morgan. That survey found that 53% of traders expect AI to impact financial markets over the next 3 years, That's up quite a bit from just a year ago, where that figure was about 25%. And amid the recent hype surrounding ChatGPT, Wall Street increasingly anticipates artificial intelligence will change how markets operate. As I mentioned, last year, only 25% of respondents held the view that AI would be significantly impacting the way in which trading is done. According to Scott Wacker, JP Morgan's global head of FICCE sales, we continue to see a strong momentum towards electronic trading, as seen by 100% of survey respondents predicting an increase in electronic trading over the coming years. To be sure, AI technology has been revolutionizing Wall Street for years. For example, the vast majority of trades are already executed by algorithms. And many asset managers have been using some type of AI, according to Bloomberg's Intelligence 2022 U.S. Institutional Equity Trading Study. But since OpenAI's language tool ChatGPT broke onto the scene in November, the bot has been proven competent in writing articles, dating app messages, and emails, giving rise to predictions on which jobs could soon be replaced by AI. Of course, the idea that you've got an AI writing data app messages, it wonders what happens if somebody shows up and it's just a computer. But anyway, we're seeing a lot of new entrants in the fixed income market, which is really pushing the electronic agenda for the whole industry. Scott Wacker said, it's an exciting time for the electronic and automation space right now, and we look to offer clients additional choice of execution options. Meanwhile, the hype that created by ChatGPT has sent artificial intelligence stocks like NVIDIA surging recently. The craze has sent some obscure small cap artificial stocks soaring too. Now, industry giants, Google, Microsoft, and China's Baidu have all had big AI announcements in recent days as the ChatGPT bot mania is taking the corporate world by storm. All of this AI news has helped boost shares of Baidu, Microsoft, and Google owner Alphabet this year. However, Alphabet tumbled Wednesday following a rocky demo of Bard, its rival to ChatGPT. Traders have been bidding up stocks of much smaller, unprofitable companies that are trying to make a name for themselves in the AI arms race. Take a look at C3.ai. Shares of the artificial intelligence software company have more than doubled this year to about $26 a share. Having secured the super relevant and easy to remember ticker of AI probably helps attract investors. And so does the fact that the company is run by tech veteran Tom Siebel, who sold his eponymous Siebel System software company to Oracle in 2006. SoundHound AI, which makes speech and other audio recognition software, has also seen its stock more than doubled this year. SoundHound AI CEO Kevin Mohajer told analysts at a conference call in November that our ambition, quote, is to make conversational AI even better than humans in natural language understanding, and also as human-like as possible in the way it responds and interacts. And then there's BigBear.ai, which offers AI solutions to the U.S. intelligence agencies and other parts of the federal government. The analytics company shares have surged nearly 700% so far in 2023. Now, the AI stock mania is reminiscent of other speculative crazes in the world of tech. You remember when crypto-related stocks soared in 2021 and then tanked in 2022? And let's not forget the epic rise of many dot-com companies in the late 90s and their subsequent plunge in the year 2000. I mean, to that end, I remember talking to some investors and I was telling them about the price-earnings ratio of particular stocks. And they said, oh, well, if you actually need a price-earnings ratio, then that's the old economy and this is the new economy. Well, obviously, investors are just as subject today as they were in the 1600s and 1700s. To getting attracted to a bubble and price and bidding the price up way past what its real actual value is. Even more recently, a year or two ago, you looked at Tesla, and Tesla itself had more market cap than the next 15 car companies combined and did $28 billion worth of business. And I remember somebody asking me at a lecture I was doing at Stanford, oh, hey, should I buy Tesla? I said, well, I don't know, because I'd rather take the next 15 companies that collectively, instead of doing $28 billion in revenue, $1.3 trillion in revenue. So, you know, the fact is that it is a normal behavioral mistake on the part of human beings to chase the hot dot, as we like to call it, or just it's basically FOMO, fear of missing out. So everybody else is buying it. I want to own crypto. Everybody else is buying it. You know, I want to own Tesla. And I think the AI stock mania that we're experiencing today is very reminiscent of those things. So investors need to avoid getting caught up in the hype. Even Mandy Long, who recently took over as Big Bear AI CEO, admits as much. Quote, she says, we're going to see a level of normalization. Are people going to be talking about ChatGPT every day for the rest of our lives? Probably not, she said, adding that the goal for the company is to create sustainable growth and show investors that it's not just about being part of a buzzy trend. Now, I think investors may be ahead of themselves. Of course, AI is no passing fad. The fact that many of the world's largest tech companies are embracing artificial intelligence is evidence of that. And yeah, we're talking about Microsoft, Meta, which is Facebook, and IBM. Long pointed out that BigBear.ai generates about 90% of its revenue from the U.S. government, a relatively stable customer that will continue to have a need for artificial intelligence technology for the long haul. And for those of you who have fears of Big Brother, this kind of reminds me that we're maybe seeing this created right now. Quote, we're a modern data mining company, she said, noting that the company is both a partner with and a competitor to big data leader Plantir. And just as the dot-com bubble paved the way for companies like Amazon and eBay and Priceline owner Booking Holdings to emerge from the rubble as stronger, larger, and more diversified businesses, several AI upstarts could also survive today's trouble and thrive in the long term. It may just take some time before the industry matures. C3.ai, BigBear.ai, and SoundHound are not currently profitable, and none of them are expected to make money this year or in 2024, according to analysts who cover them. All three stocks were crushed in the 2022 bear market, too, and are still well below their 52-week highs. SoundHound and BigBear.ai both went public recently via mergers with so-called blank check firms or special purpose acquisition companies. SPAC stocks were hit particularly hard last year. BigBear.ai is hoping to have a turn to corner after raising $25 million earlier this year through a private placement of stock. Long said the company and investors were distracted by its tenuous liquidity position and needed to build capital to keep growth on track. And SoundHound AI, AI's Mohair remained upbeat, telling analysts in November that, quote, even with a softening macroeconomic environment, the demand for AI solutions continues to grow. Times are still tough for many smaller emerging tech companies, though, especially as the Federal Reserve prepares for more interest rate hikes to fight inflation. Siebel admitted as much on C3.ai's most recently quarter conference call with analysts, Quote, we believe tech companies and tech equities will continue to face headwinds as long as the Fed keeps its foot on the brakes, Siebel said in December. The collateral damage, I think, is going to be more significant than people think. But he's still optimistic about next year, saying the company will be bigger, stronger, cash positive, profitable, and a clear market leader, and well positioned to benefit from the inevitable equity market surge that will ensue. So our take here at Opus on this is it's interesting. It's way early, and there's going to be a lot of shakeout in the industry. If you dip your toe in that water, be careful, and also don't be greedy. If you get a massive uptick in a stock and can take the profit, do it. I want to discuss something that's on the forefront of everybody's mind, and that has to do with bonds, bond yields, and you may start hearing, if you haven't already, from your advisor or from other people that it may be time to extend maturities. And I want to talk about that, but I also want to talk a little bit about, you know, where we have been positioning our clients over the last several years. You know, coming out of the credit crisis, the Fed did what they had to do, and that was to lower rates to zero to allow the banks to basically recapitalize themselves because they were way overextended. There was way too much leverage in the system. And they needed to quietly recapitalize the banking system, which they've done, which to us means that this current concern about rising interest rates is less of a concern than it might appear, because bank balance sheets have never been as strong. And we'll get into that in just a second. But, you know, the first thing is our position over the last several years has been to not lose money in bonds. So keep things short term, using floating rate issues and higher grade bonds, and even cash, because we just didn't want to lose money. Now, what has happened recently is with the Fed hiking rates, that means short-term rates go up, and we have what's called an inverted yield curve right now. A year ago, it was pretty much flat. It was like 3 months was, I don't know, half a point, and 2 years was 2.5, and the 30 years was about 2.5. Right now, 3 month bills are at almost 5%, anticipating, I think, what the Fed is going to do, which is to raise the base rate to 5%. And then it drops down from there. So 2 years is 4, and 30 years is a little less than 4. So you have what's called an inverted yield curve. Now, a lot of people talk about the inverted yield curve being a precursor to recession, and I think in this case, they're going to be right. But I don't think it's because the curve is inverted. It's because the Fed has been raising rates to try to combat inflation. We did have a good print this last week on inflation dropping down from the 6% year over year to more like 5. And that's good, but their target is 2%. And I don't think they're going to hike rates past 5%, because that'll throw us into a really deep recession. But the question is, what happens with that yield curve? Because normally you earn less on short-term maturities and more on long-term, because the bond market basically is saying to an investor, okay, well, listen, if you're going to tie up your money for 30 years, I'm going to pay you more. And that's normal. But when these inversions occur, the question is, does that mean long-term rates are going to go way up, or short-term rates are going to come back down, or some combination of the two? And I think that's what you're really looking at here. So as you look at this whole issue about interest rates and the bond market, just be careful. So the first thing is, we think that the inversion is going to revert. Short-term rates will drop back down to maybe 3%. Long-term rates will either stay where they are or go up slightly. But what are the implications of a rise in interest rates? And we've seen it most recently in the failures at Silicon Valley Bank, and Signature Bank and the like. What happened was that there was all this cash that came into the banks. And then, based on what was then the coupon rates at the time, they said, okay, I'm going to put it into a safe investment, you know, 30-year bonds, 30-year treasuries, corporates, whatever. And then rates went up. And if you're going, you know, if you're getting 3% or 4% in a coupon, and rates go higher than that, you know, if you have a 3% 30-year treasury bond and rates go to 4, that's like losing 33% of the value of that bond if you're 2 years in and you have 28 years to go. That is what caused the problem with Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank, is that they were making what is in fact a safe long-term bet that, you know, you're talking about the U.S. Treasury, and at, you know, 28 years from now, you're going to get your money back. But the current value of those bonds dropped precipitously as interest rates went up. So that's called interest rate risk. We haven't seen interest rate risk be a factor since literally the credit crisis of 2008 and 2009. And so it's sort of a shock to the system. And there are a lot of people in the business that haven't even seen that before. There are other risks that you have to think about when you're looking at bonds. The other is credit risk. And credit risk, you know, on a corporate is more significant than on a municipal bond, which has a very, very low default risk, default rate. But on something like, a corporate bond fund that is unconstrained, can go anywhere. They can do high yield bonds or even bank loans. And then suddenly those bank loans or those high yield bonds can default. So I think if you're trying to reach for yield right now, you're in trouble if you're going longer on the bond market now. And instead you go, okay, well, instead I'm going to take risk by buying high yield bonds, which have in fact gone up quite a bit from where they were not too long ago, but you have to worry about that. The other risk that a lot of people don't talk about is reinvestment risk. So for example, if you look at a current CD and you're getting a nice yield and you say, great, I'm going to lock it up for a year, there's no guarantee in a year when that thing comes mature that you're going to get that high rate that you were able to lock in. Or for example, right now, if you were to buy a 6-month treasury, you get 4.89, and that's great. But 6 months from now, that treasury bond could be yielding too. That's called reinvestment risk, or the risk that when you want to put your money back into the bond market, you're going to be able to enjoy that same change. Now, let's give it some perspective before we talk about what might make sense on a theoretical basis for you and your portfolio. So, I'll give you some statistics. So 2-year treasuries a year ago were at 229, now we're at 406. 5 years were 242, it's 361. 10-year was 232, now 349. 30-year bonds 12 months ago was 245, now it's 369. Well, that doesn't sound like a lot, but if you owned a bunch of bonds with a coupon of 2.45, and now you can buy bonds at 369, those things could have dropped 40%. That's huge. It's also true of the U.S. Aggregate Bond Index. A year ago, it was at 2.92%. Now it's at 440. If you look at municipal bonds or corporate bonds, long corporates a year ago were at 405. Now it's 529. The general corporate bond index at 360, now is 517. So those have changed. U.S. high yields a year ago was at 6, and now is at 8.5, and U.S. bank loans were at 460, and now they're at 1026. In looking at that, you would, well, you know, do the high yield and the loans. Well, that's fine, but the credit risk is more significant of a default. So here's what we're thinking in terms of, is this the time to extend maturities? First of all, I would say you have to be careful of bank loans and high yields because the default risk, as I mentioned, is going to be more significant in the coming months than it has been in the past few years. I would suggest that you wait for the Fed to stop hiking before you start thinking about extending maturities because the other shoe may drop. We don't know. They may stop hiking in anticipation that the inflation will come down, and let's say it doesn't come down to what they want, they can continue to hike. If they do that, then if you go long bonds now, you're going to get you run the risk of losing more principal. I think the other area of the market that is very attractive, especially right now, is municipal bonds, and that's because taxes are almost certainly going to be higher. And they are very competitive right now. So, again, check with your advisor. If you want to get some insight from us, feel free to give us a call. We invite you to go to our website and go to our Learn page, where you'll find other podcasts and video and audio podcasts that could help you make smarter decisions with your money, we hope. And thanks so much for tuning in, and have a great weekend.
Join us again next Saturday morning at this same time for the financial insight, opinion, and perspective of Money Management with Opus 111's Mike Nail. Have a question or comment? Email us at info@opus111group.com or visit our website, opus111group.com. Sections of this radio show contain forward-looking statements that are not guarantees of future performance. This information is from sources we believe to be reliable. However, we cannot guarantee that it is accurate or complete. These comments are for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment advice, nor as a recommendation to buy or sell any security or investment product mentioned in this show. Investing involves risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Individual circumstances do vary. Please consult an investment professional prior to making any investment decisions.